Blog Talk Radio.
And
understanding that all is indeed a blessing. You can just see beyond the veil, for it is all an illusion and a Thursday, August 13, 2015. And I want to pick up where we left off. I don't believe we can overstate the power, the effect the environment had, the conditions that we were living under, in terms of not only maintaining the traditions and the practices, but actively participating within them. And those of us who understand the history, who understand the climate, know that that climate was unique to location. We probably were the most constrained north of the border, here in North America, in the U.S., if you will. Black code laws, Jim Crow, many other ingrained systems that would have prevented, say, for Congress Square, the only location where any amount of traditional practice, dance, rhythm, drumming, and even to some degree, I'm sure, culture could have taken place, you know, without the observance of the colonizing eye. But when we look south of the border, particularly Cuba, particularly Puerto Rico, particularly Brazil, and many other places, we tend to focus on these particular large communities of people. But when you go into Panama, Venezuela, Mexico, in all points south, you will find correlations back to not only traditional African-based religious systems, but also those of the indigenous people of these lands that we now live upon. So understanding that, as you do your research, as you do your practice, as you learn, is critical to the ultimate understanding. Stated in previous recent shows, favor Sanse, favor Dominican Voodoo, favor these practices a great deal because, in my opinion, they've managed to strike a balance between the traditional West African practice, that which evolved or amalgamated here in the New World, and then we're able to bring some order to that in a way I believe, in my opinion, is clear, unlike many of the other traditions, even those here in the diaspora. Many people are confused about, is there real voodoo in New Orleans, and what is it exactly? You know, is it the grandchild of Haiti? Is it the grandchild of West Africa? Is it some bastardized thing, you know, is it only to be found in tourism and production and performance? And none of those things are true if you don't know where to look and where to seek those answers. You'll find yourself spinning your wheels for generations trying to answer those questions. So I'm trying to bring some balance to that and make the clarifying of those questions and the answers to those questions easier for us to reach and obtain. And so I often will go back to 21 divisions, Sanse, Puerto Rican Voodoo, Haitian Voodoo, Puerto Rican Voodoo, Dominican Voodoo, to not only strengthen, if you will, the text as it relates to New Orleans, but to the voodoo worldwide. When we look at the old world system, when we look at the oldest Orishas that survived, the oldest Loa that were birthed here in the New World, the oldest deities that were given honor, often they are recognized through culture and or ethnicity. So within the 21 divisions, you have the understanding of the various ethnicities Igbo, Yoruba, Fon, Iwe, Hausa, and so on that would have been manifest. As that information began to disappear, began to be compromised, because I believe it was a deliberate attempt at some point to confuse ethnicities, to confuse recognition of any sort of national or nationalistic mindset. So you then would have been lumped into something, you know, more generic. And I believe that gave birth to Congo, Guinea, as it relates to those paths, those traditions as they manifest in Haitian Voodoo, but also here in the rest of the quote unquote world. Then as that information was broken down, began to be diminished, compromised, we then began to focus our knowledge, our practices on power, on deity, on spirit. And I believe saints, the usage of saints evolved either simultaneously with that or later on as a result of that. As I said on the last show, the last full show, many people believe that we utilize the Catholic system to mask the some degree that did take place to some degree. But they were two separate systems, saints and whatever the mass traditional indigenous system was. So if we look at it like language, like dialect, you're really speaking three different languages. That of the root of the tradition, that what was remembered from the culture, was remembered from the that ethnic group or that tribe. We're talking about New World deities and forces, and then the amalgamated system that became sort of the visual from the outward, whether it was the colonists, the oppressor, or even those within our own community who did not support, did not understand, could have brought danger to the honoring and public display of these traditions. And as that became more colonized, more politicized, more infiltrated, because the colonizers always sought control, always sought power. Even when we speak of Cuba, Puerto Rico, Brazil, the Catholic New World, it's often believed we were allowed to hold on to just enough of our roots, our traditions, so that we could be put in a position to amalgamate. And it would make access to the Catholic faith, access to that symbolism more available. And they wrongfully believe that ultimately we would then surrender to those traditions. I think that happened, but much more recently, 1900 and up until today, we've seen a more universal hold, I believe, than we even saw in that time period, particularly coexisting with slavery. What true religion, what true spiritual philosophy, humane philosophy, could have coexisted in peace with the enslavement of millions of people? And we're talking about the enslavement, not to mention the lynching, the killing, the dismemberment, the separation of the family, the breakdown of the family. And that is critical to researching these traditions, how these traditions both survive and travel as we begin to lose connection to ethnic group Congo, the usage of those words in the practice. We then begin to focalize on individuals. We move from saints, Orisha, Loa, Inti, to the individual. And that's when the papas, the mamas, the, if you will, the deified ancestral host begins to make its presence in voodoo history, both in practice as well as time, the time that we had, the time, the period, meaning what we had to deal with every day, you know, whether we were free men in the U.S. or still enslaved in the U.S. or in Cuba, which I believe held on to slavery the longest in the New World. That was always in constant shift, constant flux. So we have to consider that as a tool in terms of evolution of the tradition, amalgamation of the tradition with what was practical, prevalent of today. We begin to see the concerted breakdown, particularly here in the U.S., of the Black family. The names of Big Mama, the names of Papa begin to disappear. And we then begin to use more generalized terms, like the Mammy, like the Madama. And now we want to get into other groups. Again, I believe because we lost connection to name, identity, Maria Conga, my Annabella, my Ella, you know, Ophelia, and those things begin to lose their cohesive lineal path. We begin to use more generic titles. In the Spanish community, they call those negritos, San Jose, Negro Francisco, Negro Felipe. Sometimes these names, these identities, correlated directly to one living ancestor, but in time they began to take on more generalized names. As we discussed before, some would argue that Mami Wata is a New World created Orisha or deity or Lowa. Some would even say that because of her power, her influence, West Africans then embraced Mami Wata. Mami Wata is not considered an old world deity or old world tradition, but more of an amalgamation of many water-like Yemaya, Lazarus, water-like, mother-like entities that became an archetype unto itself. When we often study spirituality and religion, particularly from a Western perspective, we hear words like archetype. And I think there is some room for the usage of that word, even within our understanding of our tradition. And when we look at the Mammy, the Madama, really an archetype. She's not necessarily a specific mother, a specific grandmother. Now, at the communal level, we might have a Big Mama, we might have the Miss Someone, you know, the Miss Jones, you know, the grandma of the community that we all know, even today, have some sense of familiarity with and sort of represents that Big Mama role in the community on the block. But in terms of the religion, and the practice of voodoo, even hoodoo, Obia, Santeria, all of these practices then become relevant as we lose the protocol, as we lose the order to some degree, and these deities then become more hot, more aggressive. We move away from the mammies and the mamas. To some degree, we went back at the root level to Congo, Guinea, type spirit, but revolution created a desire for stronger, hotter, more aggressive. We recognize in New Orleans, many recognized by name, but few practitioners actually recognized in real practice, some real ceremony, and real honor, and that's San Milo. Who was considered to be Creole, Black, possibly Native American, and Spanish. Escaped slaves. He was identified as a Maroon. And there was a time there were many Maroon camps that existed out in the swamp surrounding New Orleans. Many of that area at the time uninhabitable, at the minimum. very rightful hill to many others. But the swamp itself, the bayous themselves, began to take on almost voodoo-like qualities, elemental powers-like qualities in the organized system of 21 divisions. I believe those are called powers. A few other names that can loosely translate into elemental forces, powers, archetypes, if you will, that survive and survive into present day, Grand Milo only being one. By all means, the most popular would be Marie Laveau. Now, she's often depicted, and particularly by the tour guide, if she has any power at all, as being benevolent, mother-like figure, but more of the popular mom, the gossip mom. So if you were to believe what the tourists are trying to color the story with, that she gained her knowledge through doing hair. They really talk about her work with the plague, her work in the medical industry as an assistant, as a nurse, as a practitioner, to go to a sick, dying. You don't hear much talk or put more emphasis on her being a hairdresser, and that somehow being a key to her mobility in between the cultures, in between communities of Black and white, of Anglophone and Francophone, English speaking, French speaking. You don't hear much talk about her education. She had to have some level of education, if we believe stories about her career work. But it's also believed that many of the Haitians came over during the revolution, brought with them a certain amount of wealth, a certain amount of culture that may not have been available still at this time to the Africans here in the slave U.S. Of that time. Even up north, when we go back into history, we begin to see Phyllis and many others who were seen almost as a I don't want to say a freak of nature, but almost as a rarity, a special find in Black people, and gained their notoriety, because it was also viewed to be a rarity among Blacks to even have the ability to gain that level of knowledge, that level of expertise. Carver and many others were just making a name for themselves in pop culture at that time. We also have to look at the continued expansion of New Orleans as a port city, as looked at the Mississippi River, which was a super highway of the continent at that time, and many goods and ultimately services and brands, so that name, that concept that existed at that time, would have been traveling up the river to Memphis, Tennessee, to St. Louis, Missouri, to Chicago, Illinois. And as we do subsequent shows and become closer in to our own time period, we begin to look at hoodoo, conjure, root working, the then masculinization of the tradition. New Orleans sort of known for having elevated the woman. A great deal of that honor goes to Marie Laveau, but elevating the woman in terms of voodoo practice, the lead, if you will. I think it was only after the traditions began to move upriver, hoodoo became a more active tradition that we began to see more men. And I also think that was because just sort of women traveling on their own in that way at that time was still a new concept. Women were still believed to sort of anchor at the home, anchor in the community. And men, travelers. If you want to look at archetypes from pop culture, Chippy George was in that role. Classically, being given and being having something, possessing something of value, the mobility. He was still a slave, but he got away from the plantation. He had access to other people. He had access to news. He had access to resources, and that ability during that time, gift and honor to have, even as a slave. And of course, I'm going to be using Ruth-like references, I'm sure, quite a bit in the upcoming shows as we continue to move forward on the production of Ruth here in the beautiful city of New Orleans, Louisiana. And we are working on that right now, as well as I am maintaining a schedule in the French Quarter at First Honest, 306 Charter Street in the French Quarter. I don't really have a space there to do Ruby, a request of that nature. So be clear, if you're just looking for a consultation, a reading, and I do offer readings and consultations at a more economical price, some of you might really consider getting your reading as opposed to King or Cassandra or through my website. All three of those resources are a little bit more expensive than having a reading done with me through her site. And you don't have to be here. You just need to call the shop, Google Earth Odyssey New Orleans, Earth Odyssey NOLA, N-O-L-A. And she will help us in scheduling you an appointment, a consultation with the Divine Prince. I'll be there consistently for the next 6 days. I'm normally not there that much, that often, but the season calls for it. So look for me at Earth Odyssey, 306 Charter Street in the French Quarter. I will also be U.S. Central Standard Time as much as I possibly can while we're filming this Roots 2016. So please check back with me every day, 12 noon, and always at your leisure and convenience in archive at blogtalkradio.com/The Divine Prince. Remember to put the hyphen between the divine, the little subtraction mark between the divine in your URL. All is truly and indeed a blessing. I will be forward with more Hoodoo New Orleans Voodoo secrets and recipes. Be blessed. Ashe.